I think that's really, I mean, how do we rationalize away from the opportunistic elements and the sectarian elements that, I mean, you know, just because we have a better analysis, you know, does that immune us to those same behaviors? I think, unfortunately, I mean, often, I think we do replicate some of those top-down. And it's the separation between, once again, the mind and the body and the vanguard and the masses. It's like we're not investigating how our short-term strategy is different, you know? And we're often rationalizing, well, we have a better end story, so it doesn't matter in the short run if we're treating people in a mutual way. So Matt is going to talk about harm-free zones, about his experiences in Worcester, and a little bit framing it about how the idea came into being through some efforts in New York City.
How's everyone doing out there? Long day of listening, right? It's good practice, though, for community organizing. All right. So I'm gonna go over a little bit of the harm-free zone approach, and then a little bit of my experience working with community gardeners towards community building, and then some ideas I have about challenges we're facing and some critiques and stuff. But so the harm-free zone basically is about creating community safety, and it comes from an approach of abolition and an approach of thinking of real alternatives to police and prisons. And compañero that we worked with this summer, a week ago, was shot and killed. And this is a regular occurrence in Worcester, and I'm sure a lot of cities and places you all are from, and it brings the issue of community safety and security and all those that discussion really to an urgent place for us especially, and to come up with real community-based solutions to it, to community safety. So how do we form this justice from within a community without using police, courts, without the prison industry? And in New York City, so the idea of a harm-free zone, this term at least, came from critical resistance in New York City after an attack on the Anarchist People of Color fundraiser gathering that they had in Brooklyn. The police attacked their party, arrested 8 people, and many people were injured, and there was a whole process of working in solidarity with those people, and building, so first it was focused around police issues, police brutality, but working with community-based organizations in that direct neighborhood in Brooklyn. They found that, well, first, critical resistance was moving their office, and that they didn't, that it wasn't as community, that they weren't going to be as effective as at a community-based level. But a lot of groups in New York City were. So now they've kind of moved towards creating tools that community organizations can use for this community-based safety, community safety organizing. In Worcester, it was around kind of a similar issue. Esteban Nembhard was up in Worcester from New York City for a conference, and was beat up by 8 police officers while they yelled racist slurs, kicked him in the face, charged him with resisting arrest. And so working in solidarity with that process and with a larger police brutality coalition came the beginnings of a work on the harm-free zone. And basically it starts with planting and relationship building and identifying harms. So yeah, really, just I think this is the most key stage. We've begun this, the listening, the being there when people need you to be there in the community, building real friendships and you know, often working outside of comfort zones and identifying harms. We started with a survey at several block parties and things like that, which kind of brought us too wide, and we had to refocus working with community organizations that had already done a lot of the identifying of their priorities. And are moving into this stage of budding, right, number two, which is exploring the root causes of these harms and understanding the power and inequality. And this is a really important time for dialogue, growth, and sharing the histories of each of our communities. And we did an encuentro last fall with community organizations working on security issues from all over the region. And that really helped us build some of these stories. And a lot of people involved in the harm-free zone were really active in organizing that regional encuentro. Next stage would be flowering, which is building skills. So that's really getting into the community organizing, finding mediators that already exist when conflicts come up in the community. Let's take an apartment building. People already go to the abuela on the third floor, and they know she can help resolve this conflict. And so finding those people and learning from what structures already exist, as a few people have already talked about. And also doing real training, training ourselves about mediation and conflict resolution, and finding new people who can be those abuelas and can be those conflict mediators, and eventually working towards a mediation council. And this at this stage, it's all really just a vision, but the idea would be to have a neighborhood council that could actually take conflicts and acts of and other harms that come up in the neighborhood and deal with them on a community level, and that would be calling the harm-free zone in effect at that stage. So that's basically it. You can learn a lot more about the ideas and stuff at harmfreezone.org. It's a wiki. If you are already doing community justice or community safety stuff, please put your ideas up there too. But I think it's really interesting to have this long-term strategy in community safety organizing with a radical approach where we're really trying to create alternative ways of dealing with the harms in our neighborhoods. I think building a core that's organizing around the harm-free zone, that's when I found it useful to talk about anarchism on a one-on-one basis with people, and why I think this approach is effective. And but when I'm building relationships, when I'm going out there, I haven't found it as useful to distribute anarchist literature and things like that. But we're also part of a larger coalition that is demanding police accountability, and I think that's really important to have that side of things. That is, we're working with the Human Rights Commission at the city of Worcester, and we're working towards a citizen review board and things like that, while building the alternative institution of a harm-free zone. So I'm going to talk a little bit about work with community gardeners, and to address the issue that's come up a lot about whether reformist organizing is effective or not. I want to take a quote from Roger White's Post-Colonial Anarchism, which you can get on the Colors of Resistance website. The Black Panthers saw us that a revolutionary organization can't just pop up in the neighborhood talking about a bunch of isms and expect anyone to listen. We must make ourselves useful and help to provide for our communities if we want to be taken seriously by anyone. This is not liberalism. This is mutual aid, and it happens to be a sound revolutionary strategy as well. So working with community gardeners in Worcester, I may approach people totally in their realm of the corn that they've brought up from Guatemala. And I can, first time I talk to them, I hear about all their stories about the seeds they've brought up and their experience in Worcester, and move with these people. To maybe a year from then, I might talk to them about Monsanto and the 80-person staff they have for suing farmers worldwide, and talking about the global farmers movements and things like that. I think this again, it comes back to relationship building and trust building. In one neighborhood, we've been organizing for 4 years, and there's been a group that's come together and fallen away about trying to form a community garden. Finally, this year, they have a garden. It's one of the most active gardens, and this same group is also working towards building a community center that's attached to one of the gardens. So, and it's because of these relationships and this trust that's been built when they see that we're there to stick around, we're there to get things done with them. We can then, once we've built those relationships, talk about anarchism and talk about where we're coming from and our theories and our ideas. So, and related to that is the youth project that I work with. It's called Youth Grow. We do a lot of environmental justice work, local food system work, and we're trying to build an alternative food system based around cooperative economics. And it's really been amazing over the last 3 years, where we've come to a point where we can really talk to youth and about anarchist economics and the process of the radical democratic process we have of council meetings has really shown to be really effective in creating collective leadership. Some of the youth that have been involved in the last 2-3 years have so much ownership over this project that I haven't seen in a lot of other projects I've been involved in. Worcester Global Action Network, that we do the harm-free zone work with, someone may be coming to meetings and participating for a year or 2 years, but never really feel ownership, never really call the projects theirs. And let's see, I'm gonna probably running a little long, so I'll just skip that part. So there's a lot of challenges and critiques, self-critiques that I see. And a lot of it, I think, so I feel like there's a trend recently towards relocalization. Some people here have been talking about it as a lull in our movements. I see it more as a relocalization of our organizing. Fewer large mobilizations. And I think a lot of this is positive in terms of building institutions. There's been a lot. For example, the Beehive Collective up in Maine just returned this Grange Hall that they had totally reconstructed, and all the Grangers reunited in their community center. And there's been so many cooperatives and free schools and so many alternative institutions created. But I think this relocalization, there's a real danger in becoming too inwardly isolationist. And for example, the Northeast Mutual Aid attempt at a network kind of became just a place for skill shares and really scene-based and just kind of imploded and just had no idea about movement building. And I also see action losing emphasis. And I don't mean, you know, we're all here instead of D.C. That's a question too, but I mean on our, and maybe this isn't the case from, you know, what I've heard in Toronto and Montreal, it seems like really effective actions are happening consistently. But in Northeast U.S. at least, I've seen a lot of de-emphasizing actions, and definitely in Worcester, our local actions are tiny and not, you know, we've done lots of conferences and lots of good campaigns, but when it comes to direct action, we've really just haven't prioritized that, and I think we're missing out on really important time of local energy building through those actions. Let's see, already challenge of mobility already addressed, already talked about a lack of follow through and commitment. Let's see, and it's important to readdress and repeat that white privilege and racism still hasn't been sufficiently addressed, I think, in a lot of our groups, especially in campaign and project choice. I think there's really opportunities when we're choosing where we're going with our organizations to find projects that really bring together a group dedicated to radical pluralism. That's not so around diversity, but not the diversity that, you know, the multicultural assimilationist multiculturalism based around guilt when it's white activists or discussing this, but and not tokenist, but one that really responds to white cultural homogenization and really gets at the bottom of white privilege, and that takes on a dual power strategy that's not separationalist one. That's just building an anarchist commune away from everything else, and it might be utopia in itself, but definitely a dual power strategy that that's movement building and then has some sort of return of power to people organizing. I think Mustafa explained some really good examples of that. Also issues of gender, we definitely, people receiving male privilege, really, it's worth repeating that the need to stand up around issues of harassment and assault and rape in the movements and not see them as divisive issues and really address those head on. And of course, the subtle forms, the amount the gender imbalance in speakers at this conference, for example, and stop reproducing the patriarchy in our cultural circles as well. If I go to another show of 10 performers and they're all guys, I don't know. But another challenge, a real asset, I think, is the our ability recently to connect transnationally, to connect globally with movements, but I think it's also a challenge. How do we really connect the locals, really connect the community to community, the cooperative to cooperative enterprise? We're bringing up people from Argentina in November. We've done this for the last couple of years, but I think the question I'd throw out to you all is, how do we really make those connections in a lasting way between people who are taking over their factories in Argentina and worker struggles in the U.S. And Canada. And one more quick question I'd throw out is around, I guess there's a lot we can take from other organizing strategies. And one that other organized strategies seem to have do really well, especially reformist ones, are take concrete victories and building blocks, and of course that's easier if your primary strategy is a reformist one. But how do we with really long-term strategies and ones really based in building alternative institutions and reclaiming spaces and things like that, build those concrete victories and those concrete building blocks